Welcome to Hey, Remember the 80s? I'm Carrie.
And I'm Joe.
Please remember, we're not professional podcasters or music critics. We've just got bloody hot brains while we're talking about 80s music.
That's gross.
Okay. Tell Steve Forbert. Welcome, Joe.
Welcome, Carrie.
Thank you.
And welcome to any new listeners or loyal listeners. We found some in Chagrin Falls, Pahoa, Hawaii, and Tavistock, England.
Is that all one thing? Chagrin Falls, Pahoa,
I don't know.
Well, okay. If you live in any of those places, hi to you and hey to everyone else. And Joe, we have a very special shout out this week.
Shout out to Rick, friend and listener of the podcast. He let us know that he has caught up and he's listened to all 242 episodes of Hey, Remember the 80s. Huge accomplishment.
It truly is. I don't even know if I've listened to all of them, Joe.
I know I haven't. I lived them, though.
I know. We lived them. I don't know if I've listened to all of them after the fact, but there you go. Yes. Thank you to Rick. Thank you to everyone that keeps on, you know, messaging and saying, oh, I'm trying to catch up. And, you know, we really appreciate all of our listeners. We truly do. And everyone can keep up with us on our Facebook at facebook.com/HRT80S and Blue Sky, which is open to everyone now.
Did not know that.
Yeah. If you've been waiting for an invite to Blue Sky, now's your chance.
Let's do a quick programming note here. We're recording on Valentine's Day evening.
Mm-hmm, indeed.
I happen to feel a little under the weather today. I had some crazy allergy stuff. So I had to take a Zyrtec D. And sorry, that is like crack to me. I feel like I'm going to be talking faster than usual, which doesn't seem possible, but we'll see.
You have sounded completely normal so far, Joe.
Oh, I could have got away with it, too.
Yeah, exactly. And another programming note, we have so many tidbits to get through this week that we are supersizing the tidbits section into its own segment, along with some other random stuff. So let's get to it.
I love when we do this.
Well, first of all, just a quick morsel, TM Lady B. Tune in to Charlie's 80s Attic on Saturday the 24th or Sunday the 25th. Joe and I are putting together a special countdown of the biggest R&B acts of the 80s.
I'm so excited.
I know, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is. And we've talked about some of these R&B superstars in past episodes. And speaking of that, Carrie, did you see the festival announcement that happened yesterday?
I did. I saw it briefly and I tried to click on the picture to get a better look and I couldn't on my phone or wherever I was looking at. But what was it called again? Love is...
I got you. It's called Fool in Love in LA on the very last day of August this summer. Headliners are Lionel Richie and Diana Ross. Think they're going to sing Endless Love?
Oh, God.
They better be practicing those bum, 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 bum. But so many other people we talk about every week on the podcast, I feel like Nile Rodgers and Chic, the Isley Brothers, Chaka Khan, Gladys Knight, Charlie Wilson, Dionne Warwick, The Whispers, The Spinners, The Jacksons.
I mean, this is insanity.
Smokey Robinson.
Okay, Joe, look at this picture now. It says it's one day. Mm-hmm. Are there three different stages?
There's gotta be. I just saw a tweet today that someone posted this image of the lineup and was like, you don't see much music writing about these epic one-day festivals.
Uh-huh.
Can you see all these people? Like, what's the deal?
This is beyond amazing. You know how they put the biggest people at the top, and then as it gets down, it's smaller people. Let me tell you, who is in the last two lines of this freaking thing?
Insane.
Mary Jane Girls, Evelyn Champagne King, the Pointer Sisters, Elle DeBarge,
Kool & the Gang, Zap, George Clinton. My God.
I mean, this is crazy. If anybody is going to go to this, please let us know. You should pay $1,000 to go to this thing, the amount of acts you're going to see on this. And I have no idea how this is going to go down and how you're going to see even a quarter of these acts in one day.
I mean, look at what we did at Darker Waves. We only saw like a ninth of the acts that were there.
I just got all crazy looking at it. Now that I've seen everyone that's on this list, I'm like, this doesn't make sense. I can't wait to hear more information about what's actually going on with this thing.
Why don't we move on to something else a little nonsensical, Carrie?
Oh, boy. Go ahead.
Yep, it's the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees that were announced. I feel like life is either looking at the nominees, wondering who's going to get it, then waiting for the announcement, then waiting for the induction ceremony to air. You don't get a moment's rest.
We have a text chain with a friend of the podcast, Michael, and one of you two said something about Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees came out on Saturday. And my only response was, we're doing this again already?
Mm-hmm. I know.
I was like, insane. Not interested.
I'll just name the people that are relevant to the podcast, okay? We've got Cher, Eric B. and Rakim, Foreigner, Peter Frampton, Jane's Addiction, Kool and the Gang, Sinead O'Connor, Ozzy Osbourne, Sade, and A Tribe Called Quest. There are a few others that maybe came a little later, but you know what I was surprised about, Carrie?
What's that?
No second nomination for Cyndi Lauper.
That was my big disappointment with this announcement. I just can't believe that she didn't get in last year and that she didn't get on the ballot again this year. I do think, honestly, though, that most of these people are worthy of a nomination. I can't believe Sade is on here, not because I don't think she deserves it, but because I think she is so underrated and overlooked in general. I'm shocked that she is on here, and I would be so overwhelmingly happy if she got in. Besides that, I don't really care. Sinead O'Connor, I would be happy for. And then, you know, the big news this week is one of the Gallagher brothers has basically been saying all week, F the Rock Hall.
Then no one needs to vote for them. You know what I mean? Anyone who's going to respond with the F word to the news that they were picked and they just don't want it, then just let's not vote for them.
I said I wasn't going to get into it, but I really...
She's getting into it, folks.
I would like to know what the theory or whatever it is about UK acts. I'm going to contradict myself, I guess, because last year I was so happy that Kate Bush was included, and she's not a big star in the US. But it's just like with Oasis, to me, they're such a big UK act. I'm thinking specifically of, remember that episode of This Is Pop on Netflix about the big Oasis versus Blur.
Versus Oasis, yeah. Yes.
I mean, they were a phenomenon in the UK, like huge, huge, but they don't have much of an impact here in the States. You know, they had one big song, I feel like. Is the Rock Hall like a US thing? Is it an international thing? I just don't understand. That's my feeling about that.
Yeah. Anyway, here's Wonderwall. You gotta be the one that
saves me. Indeed. Okay, is anything more you want to say about that show?
No, because we've got to do this next one. I'm so excited. Well, let's just let everyone know, if you didn't find out already, that Tracy Chapman has re-entered the Billboard chart, just like Carrie had predicted. She's at number 42 with Fast Car. Carrie, I think you said last week, an older song has to at least get into the top 50?
Correct. That's what I read. Yep.
So weird. So like if they were 51, they just wouldn't appear.
I guess so. That's my understanding. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the Luke Combs version of Fast Car is on the chart too at number 8.
Top 10. Yeah.
And my boo, Billy Joel, I was wondering if he was going to enter the chart with his new song, Turn On the Lights. And yes, he did. That one's at number 62.
Isn't it Turn the Lights Back On?
What did I say? Sorry.
Turn on the lights.
Oh, yeah. Turn the lights back on.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Carrie, because I also found out that he returns to the Hot 100 just 1 week shy of the 50th anniversary of his first appearance on the chart. He debuted on February 23rd, 1974, number 94 with Piano Man.
Oh my goodness.
If he had just waited another week, it could have been such a great bookend and a great moment in history, but I still love this.
Yeah, I can't believe that he didn't. I can't believe someone wasn't tracking that. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And I don't want to get into get off my lawn territory, but I just got to tell everyone, when I was looking at this Billboard Hot 100, the number of names on here that I have never heard in my life, I mean, who is Benson Boone?
Oh, wasn't he like number 2?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
And the fact that Morgan Wallen is still on this chart with songs that have been on here for more than a year. Are you effing kidding me?
Yeah. Carrie, you are on one tonight. Did you also take a Zyrtec D today?
No, I didn't. But yeah, I am closing out of that window now. I had it open so I could make sure to verify what numbers we were going to talk about. But now I don't ever need to see that stuff again.
And I thought Megan Thee Stallion debuted at number one with Hiss, and now she's not even in the top 10.
I know. I saw that too. She dropped to 13. Oi, oi, oi.
Oi, 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 oi.
Well, continuing on, a couple weeks ago, Michael H. in Michigan sent us some behind-the-scenes footage of the recording of the theme to Greatest American Hero. The song was written by the great Mike Post, along with Stephen Geyer, and that's Joey Scarberry we hear singing, of course. But this footage talks about the other musicians involved, including a drummer who worked with Al Jarreau, a bassist for Linda Ronstadt, and Bruce Hornsby? He's introduced as just having written a new song for the George Lucas film. I never knew Bruce was involved in this song, and he's not credited on the album version, so maybe this was just an initial jam?
Oh, well, I might have jumped the gun on that one, Carrie, because we looked at this video a couple weeks ago, right?
Yes.
And I loved it. It was so great. It was just such a great moment in time to be captured for that news footage. I might have said on Charlie's that Bruce is playing on their album version.
I don't know. I mean, he's not listed on Wikipedia, but Lord knows that's not the definitive answer. But I mean, it's really crazy to see him. They talk about him like he's this completely new person. And they're like, he just wrote a song for the George Lucas movie. It's like, that's Bruce Hornsby. And then you're like, well, it's going to be a couple years before everybody knows who that is.
And what is this about writing a song for the George Lucas movie? Well, Carrie, in 1983, George Lucas produced an animated movie called Twice Upon a Time. It was animated in a style called lumage, which involves plastic pieces that are cut out and then filmed as they're moved around on a light table. I didn't know what that was. I don't think it caught on.
Yeah, I never heard of that technique. I never heard of this movie.
Mm-mm. Never heard of the song, but it's from Bruce Hornsby and it's called Heartbreak Town. And we've got a clip right here. The movie only got a limited release, and it was a box office bomb. I had to do a little more digging into what this movie was. Apparently, it was animated film that also had improvised dialogue, and there are two versions. One has cuss words, one does not. HBO decided they would air it, the version with cuss words, and then they heard from the filmmaker who said, that's not the version I released. Then they played the edited version and heard from viewers who were like, how dare you edit movies to air? And so they're like, you know what?
God.
We won't play it again. We're done. You happy? We're done.
That's so amazing. Let me tell you, when I went to the Wikipedia page about this, the plot summary was so long. I was like,
no, it was the longest plot summary I've ever seen. Longer than Saltburn. I mean, it was the longest plot summary in Wikipedia's history, I've got to say. And I was like, I can't. I can't.
Yeah, I know. I tried to read it and was like, I don't care. I saw someone say something about an alternate version, but I didn't read this stuff about HBO. And that is hilarious.
Well, should we talk about the song,
though?
Yeah,
we should. I enjoyed this song.
You did?
Yeah.
It didn't sound like Bruce Hornsby to me at all in terms of what his voice sounds like and what I know about his music when he was Bruce Hornsby in the Range. It was just kind of blah.
It's definitely on the rock side. It doesn't sound like his later kind of adult contemporary piano stuff. I enjoyed it. I understand what you're saying about his voice. He kind of sounds like he's straining here. Maybe it was a little bit out of his range, or who knows.
Maybe he took a Zyrtec D.
Maybe. But I was just dying to know what kind of connection this had to the film at all. And that's why I went to try to attempt to read the summary. And then I was like, I don't care. I would listen to this song again. I enjoyed it, but I'm not going to like seek it out or anything like that. Well, we got a message from Canadian correspondent Blair, who was inspired by us ranking our top five number ones of the decade to create his own list with a twist. He said he had to make two different lists, ballads and rockers. His number one rocker was The Look by Roxette, and his number one ballad was Sweet Child O' Mine by Guns N' Roses. Both great choices.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Slash called that famous riff in Sweet Child O' Mine a circus melody. Izzy Stradlin loved it and asked him to play it again. Axl Rose wasn't even in the room. He was upstairs. And while Izzy, Slash, and Steven Adler worked on the music, Axl was inspired to write the lyrics. It was the first number one for the band and ironically only made it to number 7 on the rock chart. Here is a clip of Slash performing the song with a very interesting choice of singer. If you didn't guess, that was Fergie on vocals.
Oh, man. I thought you were going to put a clip of the Sheryl Crow version.
Sheryl Crow has a version?
Yeah, it was a cover that was on the Big Daddy soundtrack.
That's right. But Slash didn't play with her, did he? Sure hope not.
I don't know.
I have really fond memories of Sweet Child O' Mine, and I know we've talked about them before on the podcast, but it was just like this weird dichotomy between, I remember Welcome to the Jungle and kind of feeling a little bit scared by it and not really understanding it. And then they came out with Sweet Child O' Mine, and I was like, oh, but I like this, and this is sweet, and I can listen to this.
Yeah, I would put it in the same category as Patience. These were both songs that I was really into, but yeah, the other ones I could not deal with. Guns N' Roses were just a phenomenon that entered our neighborhood at some point, no idea where. It was just like, they're here, and this is all anyone's going to talk about for a full year.
It was really wild. They came out of nowhere and kind of took over everything. I still like this song, and I will listen to this song. It is a ballad. Of course, it's a sweet song, but I do think that that riff gives it an edge that is interesting.
Yep. Agreed, fully. Blair also responded to our query about whether French music was big in Canada during the 80s, and he says, no, I never heard any French songs until we got Much Music later in the decade. Then they would play a few videos, but that was it. I know about 10 words in French, and that's it, but they never played that stuff on the radio or on TV unless you were in Quebec.
Good to know. Thank you, Blair, for that report.
Yeah, love that insight. Well, we're flashing back to last week. We talked about a series going on right now on BBC Radio featuring some of our 80s faves. It's called Vernon Kay's Piano Room, which is apparently the most listened to radio program in the UK. They've got a different act each weekday performing with the BBC Concert Orchestra. Right now, here is a clip of Rick Astley performing Never Gonna Give You Up, but with a twist.
We're no strangers to love. You know the rules, and so do I. A full commitment's what I'm thinking of. You wouldn't get this from any other guy. I just wanna tell you how I'm feeling. I gotta make you understand. I'm never gonna give you.
In case you couldn't quite place it, the orchestra was playing Shape of You by Ed Sheeran. That is a fun new take on a song that all has seemingly been said about up until now. But wait, Carrie found a new-to-her article talking about a unique part of how that song became so popular in the States back in the day.
Joe, before we get to that, we should talk about what we thought about this version. What did you think?
It's not anyone's fault that I have such a strong aversion to Shape of You. I don't know if I've ever voiced this to you, but anytime a big artist comes out with two singles on the same day, I always think the other one is going to be the huge phenomenon.
Okay.
You probably don't remember, but Ed Sheeran came out with Shape of You and Castle on the Hill on the same day.
I did not remember that. Okay.
And I was like, oh God, no one is going to like Shape of You. It sucks. And it became, I don't know, the most played song on Spotify ever.
I think so, yes.
And it made me think of Beyoncé's Single Ladies and If I Were a Boy. I was like, what is this Single Ladies robot noise? All anyone is going to care about is If I Were a Boy.
This is so bizarre to me. I'm sorry. Again, I'm like an old person. I'm so far removed. Why are these people releasing two different singles on the same day?
To drum up interest for an upcoming album.
That's wild.
This one's a little more niche, but also mm-hmm. Bright Eyes did the same thing when he put two albums out on the same day.
What?
He released a single from each one, and I was like, oh God, yeah, of course, this electronic one is going to hit. And then, no, it was the, I can't even remember the name of the song.
Ugh.
And I have other examples if I had thought about it, but
okay.
That's all I got for now.
Yeah, I've never liked Shape of You either. I actually really love Castle on a Hill. I think it's a good
Hello?
Song.
Hello? Yes.
But yeah, okay. This is just a little thing that Rick Astley is doing, you know, for this program or whatever. I thought it was interesting. And I do think it's important. Never Gonna Give You Up and Shape of You, I guess, are probably two of the most played songs
I ever. Guess, yeah. You know what? They are linked in that way. And I never thought of it until just now. But you're right.
It was fun. And we've talked before about Rick Astley lately. He sounds great. But getting back to this article about how Never Gonna Give You Up actually became so popular in the States, we've mentioned the name Larry Levan on the podcast before. He was a DJ at a very famous club in New York City called the Paradise Garage. It opened in 1977 at the height of the disco era. But even after disco disappeared from the charts, the Paradise Garage thrived. And there was an article published on Pitchfork in 2015, which talks about how Larry Levan was responsible for igniting some of the biggest hits of the 80s. We'll post that article for you on Facebook. It's definitely worth a read. Levan didn't care about music genres. His only criteria for playing a song was whether it moved the crowd or not. And even though the Paradise Garage closed in September of 1987, 6 months before Never Gonna Give You Up hit number one, the article talks about part of the push for the single in the U.S. was providing it to Levan in mid-1987. Levan's play of the song helped to push it out to the masses.
That's great. I love that.
He made Love is a Battlefield into a club hit. Everybody's always trying to divide music into genres, and we'd even do it ourselves on this podcast. But like at the end of the day, yes. Is the song good or not? Does the song make people move or not? I like that as a theory.
Yep. That's the most important criteria. Well, of course, we have to play you a clip of the other song Rick Astley performed in the Piano Room. Tell me if you recognize this one. I know we weren't perfect, but I never felt this way for no one. And I just can't imagine how you could be so okay. Now that I'm gone, I guess you didn't mean what you wrote. You said forever, now I drive alone past your street.
Carrie,
I have to...
Yeah, go ahead. No, go ahead.
You're going to say what I'm going to say.
Go.
Were you disappointed that he didn't curse?
Yes. He says really instead of effing.
Yeah.
I would have loved to hear him say that. I understand why he didn't. But when we talked about this last week and we read that he was covering an Olivia Rodrigo song, I think we guessed or we had it confirmed already.
I looked it up. Yeah.
And we were so excited for it. What were your thoughts about the actual performance?
Okay, so he sounded good.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that. I thought the comments on the YouTube clip were very unkind.
I saw those too.
I was so upset. Yeah. I was like, you know what? He's a man in his mid-50s. He sounds good. He's trying to do something unique. So shut the f*** up.
I know. I liked it. It actually grew on me the more I listened to it.
True.
There was a lack of connection, I think, between the feeling of the song, yes, and Rick Astley as an old man.
He could have took a page out of my playbook when I did Olivia Rodrigo's Bad Idea Right at karaoke a couple weeks ago. I think I killed it. We'll find the footage. No, Dave, do not put the audio on this, please.
But I had very high expectations, and it didn't live up to it, but that's my fault.
I don't know if this is fair to say, but I just feel like that song is so uniquely Olivia's.
That's true.
And many people have covered it. Even Kelly Clarkson, who famously will sing a song better than you. I don't think there's any version better than Olivia's.
I don't disagree with that at all.
Great. Love that for me. Oh, that's a lot of tidbits and grab bag.
We're going to revisit the piano room performances in the coming weeks because there's still a lot more of those to cover.
Can't wait to hear Tony Hanley's Lana Del Rey cover.
We'll get to that one next week, Joe.
Great. Yeah, he better f***ing cuss.
Well, we have another segment.
Yeah, and Carrie, now it's time to go
just a bit outside.
This is the recurring segment where we cover each Hot 100 single of the 80s that peaked between 41 and 100. We've only got two for you this week, and they're both from 1980. Sorry, Matt Baylor. We're starting with I Was Looking for Someone to Love by Leif Garrett. Hey, this is the second time we're covering Leif Garrett in Just a Bit Outside, and there's really not much more to say. This was his ninth single to hit the Hot 100, and it peaked at number 78 on May 10th, 1980. Leif's label was Scotti Brothers Records, and they were also responsible for introducing Weird Al to the world. In the Weird Al movie last year, Tony Scotti was played by Weird Al himself, and Ben Scott was played by Will Forte. Feel like I remember Scotti Brothers labels on the record. Did they have like a sphinx on them?
I have no idea.
I feel like Survivor was on Scotti Brothers as well.
You're absolutely
really?
Right.
Really? How did you know?
Because I read the Scotti Brothers Wikipedia when I was writing
this. Who else?
Iron Horse. I mean, they're a little bit obscure. Fred Knobloch. And this is the one I was thinking of. John Schneider
I'm sorry.
Was on their label.
Can we just, for one second, take a moment to shit on Fred Knobloch?
God, I hate him.
Oh, God.
Horrible, horrible. Yeah. Some of the worst songs of the 80s. Yeah.
Speaking of, let's talk about this Leif Garrett. Am I saying it right? I feel like I've heard people say Leif Garrett.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't care. I don't care.
It doesn't matter. And you know what? Let me just say this. I'm sorry. This is so mean. But when it comes to teen idols throughout the years, 95% of the time, I'll see a picture and I'll think, I get it. This makes sense. I understand what was happening in the world. Mm-hmm. The album art for this song on the playlist was like 18 different pictures of him. And I was like, what?
He looks like a total dope. He's just got this blank look on his face every picture I've ever seen of him. And that's even before I think he was blitzed out of his mind on pot or cocaine or whatever he was doing. Allegedly. Although I think he's admitted to that. But anyways.
Oh, yeah.
It's nothing. It's like a nothing burger.
You know, if the looks aren't there, then maybe the music.
Yeah.
And then I listen to the music and I'm like, okay, was he funny?
I don't even know. What was his deal? Was he
no idea. What was he even in? I don't know.
There are some people where you're just kind of like, okay, I mean, it was of the time. Who knows what was going on? But this is a complete and utter mystery.
No.
Well, next up is a really underrated artist that we play a lot on Charlie's 80s Attic. I'm talking about Steve Forbert. And I told you all about his hit Romeo's Tune back in episode 43 when I brought it as a song that time forgot.
A song that time forgot.
He was called the new Dylan by the Village Voice, but he never reached iconic status like Dylan. His follow-up single to Romeo's Tune was called Say Goodbye to Little Joe.
You got no right to her love. You with your bloody hot brain. Oh, don't try to suck her back in. No one could make her remain. Just say goodbye to Little Joe. Just turn her loose now, let her go.
It peaked at 85 on April 19th, 1980. He got into a dispute with his record label in the mid-80s and didn't record for a few years, but then he signed to Geffen Records, and he has continued to release music throughout the years. He is currently touring in the U.S. and might be coming to a venue near you.
That's great news. We should go.
I do, in fact, have a question for the listeners to weigh in on. Steve Forbert is coming to both Madison and Milwaukee on a Friday and a Saturday night, both of which are about 45 minutes from me. So I could go see Steve Forbert, and I want to know if people think I should.
Yeah, I would go. When is it?
Friday, March 30th and Saturday, March 31st, I think, are the dates.
Oh, I'm busy. This just popped into my mind. Close your eyes and picture Steve Forbert.
Mm-hmm.
Does he kind of resemble the actor, I forget his first name, Lacey, that was in Obvious Child in the
Jake
Office?
Jake Lacey? Yes.
Jake Lacey.
He does.
Yes. Yay.
Amazing. Well, this song is great.
Oh, yeah.
I love Romeo's Tune. I love this song. I know Charlie put in like 10 to 12 songs by Steve Forbert.
I love them. And I love them all when they come on.
They're great. He is underrated. You would think he's putting it on, but you can tell he's not. This whole gruffness to his voice and something that people, I think, have tried to achieve later on. I'm thinking of Scott Weiland of Stone Temple Pilots or something, but it sounds fake coming from him. But Steve Forbert has got that gruffness in his voice that is natural.
Yeah, and this is a great song. I almost like it better than Romeo's Tune. Speaking of Charlie's, what was that song you played on Dare to Be Different tonight that was talking about spinning around? Forget what was happening at dinner, but I go, Dave, if you don't stop whatever's happening, I'm not going to get to open the phone and see who this is. And then I didn't get to open my phone and see who it was.
Spin Me Around by the Modulators.
Oh, I loved that. We need to talk about them because that was great.
Okay, I'll put it on a list.
Oy, oy, oy. All right, well, you guys will weigh in on if Carrie should see Steve Forbert and when and where.
Yep, indeed.
And that wraps up Just a Bit Outside.
It does wrap up Just a Bit Outside.
So I think that's all we've got for today.
Yeah. No, it does not wrap up our episode.
Are you sure?
I am sure because we have a quiz.
I don't think so. A quiz. Oh, no. I wasn't ready.
So you're never ready.
Yeah, as evidence is in the scoreboard right now.
Yeah, well, before today's quiz, you have 16 and I have 20. But I will tell you that today, there are 12 points available, and I only got 8. So you have some room to make up some ground here. And remember, these are just quizzes from Learned League, MTV, the early years. So let's start it off. I did not get this first question right. Maybe you will.
I want to say at the beginning, I don't want to know which ones you got right and got wrong.
Okay.
I think that really gets into my brain.
I'm sorry. I will.
No, this is just a thing I've come up with today. And as you know, I've got a bloody hot brain today for some reason.
Well, let me ask you then, which guitarist and teenage MTV VJ was fired after bad-mouthing the channel on the Howard Stern show?
How could that be in the early days of MTV? How was Howard Stern having a show?
Remember, what? The early years is very subjective.
To 88, 89. Yeah. Okay. Well, then, you know, the only thing I can say is Ricky Rockman.
Very good guess.
Well, we don't care about if it's a very good guess. We care about if it's right or not.
It's not right. I had no idea who they were talking about. I said Jesse Camp. The answer is Dweezil Zappa.
Yeah, got it.
Okay.
He was so cute, though. They should have gave him a pass.
Joe, in the making of this video, identified by MTV as the most played of all time, the singer needed to lay under a sheet of glass for 16 hours while a production team mashed up a variety of animation styles, including claymation, stop motion, and pixelization.
Are we sure they didn't use Lumage?
Indeed.
Is it Sledgehammer by Peter Gabriel?
It is Sledgehammer. Question three. Multiple videos by what band have the following plot line? An attractive man who is experiencing frustration in his menial job is assisted in gaining social stature and sexual experience by a triad of very attractive and somewhat mysterious women traveling in a red car.
ZZ Top.
Correct. The lyrics to this cover song were changed to avoid censorship for obvious drug references. For example, in the line, "How does it feel when you got no herb?" Herb was changed to food. Probably not a bad idea since it was performed by a group of schoolboys all under 16.
Pass the Dutchie.
Correct. The next question is a picture question. I am cutting and pasting the picture into the outline right now. And the question is, this is a still frame from what video?
Oh, Dancing in the Dark. I just listened to the Blaster Mix last night.
Blaster Mix forever. All right, number six. What do the initials PMRC stand for?
Did you get this one right?
You don't want to know.
I want to know.
I did not get this one right.
PRMC, is that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
Parental Resource Music Committee.
You might have had the wrong order, but you didn't get the words right anyways. And I got to tell you, the correct answer is Parents Music Resource Center. And my answer was Parents Music Resource Committee. So we were almost identically wrong.
Right, but I think we can both agree that, yeah, right?
Well, 100%. Moving on to the next day of questions. What name is missing from this list? Marisol Massey, blank, Alicia Coppola, and Susan Ashley.
What? Say them again.
Hold on. I will paste this for you so you can okay. See it.
Janet Gardner.
The answer is Kari Wuer.
Why?
Because these are the lady sidekicks from Remote Control.
Okay.
But I didn't get it right. I said Apollonia because I had no idea.
Who would know this?
I guess someone who was obsessed with MTV in the early years. Joe, what music video begins with a girl sitting in a coffee shop reading a comic book about race car drivers?
Take on Me?
Yes. What famous 1980s duo took their name from their interest in the primal scream therapy technique of psychiatrist Arthur Janoff?
Tears for Fears.
Correct. We have another picture question. This is a still frame from what video?
Don't Come Around Here No More by Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
Correct. The following lyrics come from what song? Love is like a bomb, baby, come and get it on. Living like a lover with a radar phone.
Pour Some Sugar on Me.
Yes. Last question for today. The famous I Want My MTV commercial campaign was inspired by / copied from a series of commercials for what food brand from the 1950s featuring famous athletes such as Mickey Mantle and Johnny Unitas?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. My guess would be, and it's not right, Wheaties.
No, I said Velveeta, and the answer is Maypo. Which I've never even heard of.
Get the f*** out of here.
Joe, you got 8. I got 8. So the totals right now are 28 for me and 24 for you.
You know, I can live with that. I'm not any further back than I was before.
That's true.
It's the best I can hope for. And what's the total? How many more do we have?
We've got 5 more days of 6 questions and then 1 day of 10 to 12 questions. So a long way to go.
I guess what you're saying is it's anybody's game.
It is anybody's game, indeed.
That'll help me sleep tonight. You know what won't help me sleep tonight? That's Zyrtec D.
You're a nut. I told you, you need to take advantage of this. You need to, like, do some
I did. I wrote so many spots. I did. I really did.
Well, that is it for this week, Joe. Don't know what we're going to do next week yet.
We recorded early, so this is going to come out Tuesday. It'll be a while till we record again is how I feel about it, so we'll have something good. You never let me down, Carrie.
Oh, thank you. That's sweet. I do my best. So, yeah, hope everything is good for everyone out there. Anything else you want to talk about?
How's your moonlighting watch coming along, Carrie?
Badly. I need to get back into it.
I mean, we're both on the last season, so we're not doing too bad. I did want to apologize for saying that I thought Gladys Knight did the accent commercials in the 80s. It was really Marla Gibbs. Mm-hmm. Marla Gibbs.
Well, thank you for that correction, Joe. And you can take us out.
Well, everyone, thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to the old episodes and trying to catch up. Thanks for talking to us on Facebook. Comments, messages, likes, it's all gravy. We love it so much. So thank you. And if you would take any advice from us from listening to this, then you would just choose to be kind to yourself, be kind to others, and enjoy every sandwich.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
I see Bill and Charlie. No, wait. Eddie got smart. He had a golf game. He just had to go to it. Why do they always have to ask that question? You know the one. Should I speak now or forever hold my peace of mind?